Okay, the subcommittee will come to order. We will turn to Ms. Ink for opening remarks.
Chairperson Ruta and Congressmember Keller, distinguished members of this committee, thank you for the opportunity to join you today. My name is Judith Ink. I served as regional administrator at EPA Region 2, which was the best region in the country because it included New York, 8 Indian nations in New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. I'm forever grateful to President Obama for giving me that opportunity for public service. Since leaving EPA, I started a new project called Beyond Plastics, and I teach a class at Bennington College on plastic pollution. So I usually have a whole semester to cover this topic, but I promise to do it in 5 minutes. This is a problem that is getting worse every year. And I have to say that the response from Congress and from federal agencies has been completely inadequate. I hope that changes because of you, your holding of this important discussion today. And also because, unlike on climate change issues, I've never met a plastic pollution denier. And that's because plastic is everywhere. It's in our neighborhoods, it's in streams, plastic bags are up in trees, it's on beaches, and 9 million metric tons of plastic enter the ocean every year. 80% of that comes from the land in the form of litter that gets washed into storm drains, then it goes into rivers, and then goes into the ocean. What happens when plastic gets into the ocean is the sunlight makes it brittle, and then the wave action breaks it up almost like a paper shredder. So one plastic bottle can become hundreds, if not thousands, of tiny pieces of plastic known as microplastics. The term microplastic didn't even exist until the mid-2000s. These are little pieces of plastic up to 5 millimeters in size, the same size as a grain of sand or salt. These microplastics are then eaten by marine life, other mammals, and ultimately you and I. The ocean provides about 200 billion pounds of food for people around the world every year. And I'm really sorry to say that we are turning our oceans into an unpermitted landfill. Unless we significantly change the way plastic packaging is handled, scientists tell us within the next decade, for every 3 pounds of fish in the ocean, there will be 1 pound of plastic. It's not only in the water, it's also in the air. A recent article that appeared in the journal Science by Dr. Janice Braney of Utah State University found a significant amount of plastic in the air. The Congress member mentioned that we're all ingesting about 1 credit card worth of plastic every year. I really want to talk about ethane crackers because plastic is very much a climate change issue, but I'll leave that to the other distinguished briefers today. But I can say that we can't solve climate change without reducing plastic pollution. I think the two federal agencies that are charged with addressing this issue, NOAA and EPA, are not doing a good enough job. They're very much focused on dealing with plastic after it gets into the ocean and not preventing the plastic pollution at the source. A good way for all of us to think about this is, let's say you walk into your bathroom and the tub is overflowing. You're not going to take a cup and try to bail out that bathtub. You're going to reach to the faucet and turn off the tap of water and stop the flooding. That's what we need to do with plastic pollution. We need to turn off the tap. Recycling of plastics has not worked. The recycling rate is an anemic 8% compared to paper at 66%, glass at 27%, ferrous metals at 33%. And essentially, we're just producing too much waste. In 2017, we generated 268 million tons of municipal solid waste. That is not sustainable. I think the most important thing for members of Congress to do is pass the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act introduced by Representative Lowenthal in the House and Senator Udall in the Senate. There's an important component in that act that puts a pause on the permitting of new ethane cracker facilities. And finally, I just want to say the data is there. The public is paying attention. What we need is for Congress to make this a priority. We need Congress to have the political will to act, because every year the problem is just getting worse. Thank you.
And with that, recognize Vice Chair Tlaib for 5 minutes of questioning.
So I think it is important today to talk about this link between plastics manufacturing, greenhouse gas emissions, and the toxic air that communities in Louisiana and Texas are experiencing every day. So I want to ask, what are some of the health risks associated with living near petrochemical plants? I know you talked a little bit about that, but I want to ask you to kind of talk about it further.
Sure. So it's unfortunately many things. The EPA and state environmental regulators hand out permits to pollute. When I say they, it used to be me at EPA, so this is some self-criticism. State and federal regulatory agencies do not do a good job looking at cumulative impacts. So you can have one smokestack here that meets Clean Air Act standards and one a half a mile away. They don't look at both at the same time. That said, the Clean Air Act has been very effective. It was signed into law by President Nixon, updated by President George Herbert Walker Bush. It all comes down to enforcement, making sure that the letter of the law is followed. If it's not, you have an increase in, for instance, PM2.5 particulate emissions. The Harvard School of Public Health has documented that if there are high levels of PM2.5 in the air, your body is less able to beat back viruses, including COVID-19. The Formosa facility that is being reviewed for expansion in Louisiana will significantly increase benzene emissions, a suspected carcinogen. When I work with communities, people are so often surprised at these permits to pollute and the amounts of material that are allowed to be emitted into the air. And of course, the whole issue of PFAS chemicals. Yes. Is now on the surface. So clean air is about good health, and agencies are not doing a strong enough job on enforcement. They have the tools if they want to use them.
Ms. Ink, what are some of the health impacts of exposure or ingestion of these substances by our fellow citizens?
There are lots of good information out there. A terrific report, What's in the Package, Unveiling the Toxic Secrets of Food and Beverage Packaging, is a report put out by Clean Water Action. And it's just page after page of potential health risks when plastics leach into food. I think most people know by now, do not put plastic in the microwave. Be very careful with anything acidic in polystyrene cups, like a cup of tea. There was a McGill University report out of Canada that showed microplastic in tea bags. So definitely don't put tea in polystyrene, because you might get the double dose of the microplastics in the tea bag and then the styrene leaching from the cup. And styrene is a suspected carcinogen. So this is an area that needs a lot of attention. And what I appreciate, Congressmember, the way you framed this is we've got to look at the whole life cycle, not just production, but production, use, and then disposal. And I do want to address the issue that this is major, you know, this is predominantly a problem in Asia. A lot of the plastic that is being sent to Asia and Africa originates in the United States and the EU. China closed its doors to imports of American recyclables. And if you have a moment, I urge you and all committee members to take the time to watch the landmark movie called The Story of Plastics. It looks at plastics through the lens of human rights and how American companies have completely failed at plastic recycling despite their advertising campaigns, and how we are exporting plastic waste to Asia, Africa, and other countries that are not equipped to handle it.
Ms. Inc., recognized for a quick minute or two.
The use and the disposal of plastic is the environmental justice issue of our time. The reason it is cheap is because, as Ms. Hardin just described, environmental externalities, these toxic air emissions and carbon, go into the atmosphere at typically no cost. And secondly, there are tremendous subsidies from the federal government and the state government for fossil fuel production. I completely reject the notion that this is a cultural issue and that it's up to you and me as consumers to move away from plastic. You enter an American supermarket, it's virtually impossible to walk out without plastic. It is a myth that we can recycle our way out of this problem with an anemic 8% recycling rate. We need to make less plastic. How do we do that? We passed the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act, which requires companies that produce the product to take responsibility for proper use and disposal. We hope that will result in a real shift toward reusable and refillable packaging. This is not rocket science. This is things like when I grew up in my school cafeteria, we actually ate on real dishes and real utensils, and there were dishwashing equipment. We can go back to things like that. And I do, unfortunately, want to close on a negative note, and that is, while I deeply appreciate the increased use of PPE, I wish the president would wear a mask. We all need to wear masks. But what we're really talking about is a lot of single-use plastic packaging, that there are ample alternatives available in terms of reusable, refillable material, and also non-plastic material. Thank you.